Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to The Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Mikelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 108 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 34 of A Clash of Kings, that's John 4.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes, they'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography in this chapter. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It was good to see you in person yesterday.
Yeah, we saw each other. That was weird.
Yeah.
I mean, not that weird. I mean, you hadn't grown or anything.
At least I hadn't gotten taller. I might have grown a little around the midsection, but it's been a few weeks since we saw each other, I guess, since our 100th episode, I think, was the last time we've seen each other in person.
Right, yeah.
And it was beautiful
probably
weather.
Like 8 weeks. We do finally have beautiful weather.
Yeah.
The transition from August to September was like night and day.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty much overnight. It was like 90-something one day and low 80s the next. Yeah. Yes, we had a work function that we met up at. So I did take a selfie of the two of us, so I'll put that on the social medias if you want to check that out.
I noticed that the nature of that selfie made you look a lot taller than me. I think next time we do a selfie, I'm going to get a little Tom Cruise box to stand on.
I could have bent down a little bit, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, the truth is the truth, you know. So on the subject of work, I had a bit of a setback. I don't know if you know this, but I think of myself as quite charming.
I have a vague awareness of that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there was a person at work who was unhappy with something, and I dialed it up to 11. I thought I will make this person happy.
Much like the eye doctor assistant. You really...
Oh my god, all my stories are the same story. It's me thinking I'm more charming than I actually am. But it really, I mean, this really didn't work. This got absolutely nowhere. And there was a third party on the call. And after the call was over, the third party came back to me and said, "So the fabled McGrow the Charm has met its match." And I was like, "It's true." So yeah, man. Not as charming as I think.
Someone just doesn't, they're just not getting it is all.
Yeah, that's what we'll go with.
Some nuts you just can't crack.
And, yeah, that's true.
You met one there, I guess. Yeah. Well, you know, next time you just gotta just gotta work on said person, whoever it might be.
Yeah. Oh, they'll come round.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you work on them long enough, they'll
exactly.
They'll succumb.
It's the irresistible
to the charm.
Force, my charm. Eventually.
Yeah, it's like our listeners. Once they make it past episode 2. They can succumb to your charm and me just being around, I think. As long as I hang around you, your charm leeches over to me, I guess. But speaking of charming things, I'm still charming my wife 22 years later. Our anniversary was 2 days ago. It was earlier this week. And I posted a picture on social media. I posted a picture on our Discord server as well from our wedding day. And man, tell you what, you just forget how young you once were. You know, mm-hmm. I was a baby.
We got married in the same year, right?
Yeah, 99, right? Yeah.
99, yeah.
Yes, I think you got married in May and I got married in August, right?
So March.
March, yes. Oh yes. March. And it was an M month. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, so 22 years later, Stacy still hasn't realized how far out of my league she is.
So that's a nice thing to say.
I appreciate that lack of self-awareness every year. Or maybe she has realized it and is just like, at this point, like, eh,
yeah,
doesn't matter.
I mean, obviously I could do better, but what's the point?
Right. Seems like a lot of rigmarole to get myself out of this situation. Oh, man. Anyway.
All right. Let's get down to business. How do we leave Jon Snow? Last we saw of Jon, he and his Night's Watch brothers spent a night at Craster's Keep. Jon was visited by a daughter of Craster, Gilly, who feared for her unborn son's safety and wanted Jon to take her with them when they left, a request Jon could not fulfill. Mormont traded Craster a few weapons for information on Mance Rayder, including the location in the Frostfang Mountains where he's congregating the wildling population. Why don't we give him the summary of this one?
All right. The Great Ranging has found a temporary home. It's a ring fort atop a rocky hill known locally as the Fist of the First Men. Jon has his reservations about it, not the least of which is that it has no natural water supply, requiring water to be carried up from a stream below. Mormont's unconcerned, though. He likes the fortification and vantage point it provides. Ghost agrees with Jon and refuses to breach the ring of stones at the top.
After Jon sets up Mormont's camp, he stands on one of the huge stones and takes in the landscape. On the other side of the Milkwater River, the Frostfang Mountain Range takes up the view to the north and west, cold and imposing. To the southeast, the haunted forest goes on as far as the eye can see. A sense of foreboding comes over Jon. He shakes it off as the effects of the haunted forest on the psyche. Sam disrupts his thoughts by hailing him.
It seems Sam is faring pretty well. Jon decides not to ruin Sam's positive vibes by mentioning his own disquiet. And the pair walk back to the heart of the camp together before Jon splits off to check on the Lord Commander. He finds Mormont in his tent, talking with some of the officers about a plan of action. They consider the best ways into the Frostfangs and the merits and drawbacks of each.
Sir Otten Withers thinks they should steer clear of the mountains entirely. Too dangerous even in the summer. Mormont agrees and has no plans to trek into the mountains unless they have no choice. He figures the wildlings can't survive in that inhospitable environment for long and will have to descend at some point. With a group that large, they'll have to follow the Milkwater out and in doing so will be visible to the ranging party from their lofty perch. Sir Malador suggests that wildlings may not care to slip by them. They number in the thousands, whereas the Night's Watch force is only 300 once the Shadow Tower men have arrived.
Mormont thinks that if it were to come to battle, that they're in a pretty good position being on the high ground, and he wants plenty of eyes watching for wildling movement. And to address the lack of water issue that Jon mentioned earlier, he orders water to be brought up from the stream and cisterns dug. He also restricts Thorin Smallwood's rangers to the east side of the Milkwater, at least until Corrin Halfhand shows up with the other 100 men from the Shadow Tower. Smallwood thinks it's a bad idea. Mance Rayder could be amassing an army nearby, and they'd never know. Mormont says they know where Mance Rayder's force is gathering. Craster gave him that info. And Smallwood sulks and leaves the tent, and the other officers all take their leave as well.
When it's just the two of them, Mormont asks Jon his opinion of his decision to keep the Rangers so close. Jon worries that with the Rangers so limited, they'll not find his uncle Benjen. Mormont confesses that they couldn't find Benjen with 10,000 men. The land is too vast. Jon realizes Mormont's plan. It's easier for Benjen to find them with all their men, horses, and fires on top of this hill than for the large group to find Benjen alone in the vast wilderness. Mormont figures that with the spectacle they're making, if Benjen is alive, he'll find them. They both realize that even if he's dead, he may still find them.
Uh-oh. Jon leaves the Lord Commander to rest and visits with the men around the cook fire. Dywin says that it smells like cold out here tonight, and nobody but Jon understands what that means. Jon knows that cold smells like death. Having lost his appetite at that thought, Jon goes back to his camp. While he's rebuilding the fire, Jon hears wolves howling in the distance, and he looks up to see Ghost silently staring at him across the flames, the wolf having finally crossed into the ring fort.
Ghost acts oddly unsettled, reminding Jon of when the wolf alerted him to Othor's corpse having reanimated. Ghost leads Jon out of the ring fort and down the hill into the forest below. Following the wolf through the trees in the darkness gets old and dangerous, but just as Jon thinks to give up, he finds Ghost digging in soft dirt. Jon takes over the digging and finds a bundle that's been fairly recently buried. Wrapped in cloth, he discovers a war horn as well as knives, spearheads, and arrowheads made from obsidian, otherwise known as dragonglass. Closer inspection of the cloth reveals it to be a cloak of a brother of the Night's Watch.
Whoa. That was the most interesting thing in this whole chapter. The last paragraph. We could have just come on here and said, just read the last paragraph and keep going.
Yeah. I think of all the chapters we've gone through, this is probably the one with the least that we can talk about. I mean, it is really, I mean, not nothing is happening, but it can't be analyzed. It's like, right. Yeah, okay. The only thing that can be analyzed is the stupidity of the whole situation.
But
that gets old for me. I mean, I've said a million times how daft this whole thing is.
You know? Yeah, we've definitely talked about that a fair amount. Why are they doing this again?
Yeah. One part of this that really puzzles me, actually, is Ghost's behavior. Because Ghost hasn't been freaked out by anything to this point.
True.
But he's afraid of this ring fort.
Right.
I mean, it seems strange. He bit off Jaffa Flowers' hand, didn't he?
He did, yes. And carried it over to John.
And when Otho woke up, he was, like, scrabbling to attack him, not scrabbling to get away from him.
Right.
So what's scaring him about a ring for? And the thing is, this is partly me knowing what's coming. I really don't get it. I mean, like, I don't see anything that would be making him trouble. And John's, the thing at the end there about John sort of reacting when somebody mentions smelling the cold. They're north of the wall in the growing winter. It's gonna smell cold, you know? The smell of cold may get worse when the others come, but it's going to smell cold 24/7, really.
There's some solid logic there. Yeah, it's definitely an odd thing for Ghost to do. I was wondering about it, too, as I was reading the chapter, and I wondered if maybe he doesn't like being pinned in on the top of the hill, being exposed and open like that, maybe. Or he doesn't like the vibe he gets within that ring fort. Well, we know it's called the Fist of the First Men, but we don't know what the First Men used it for. Maybe,
was a fort.
I mean,
they built a wall around it. I mean,
maybe it was like a prison or a torture chamber or something like that. And, there's
still,
some lingering
Ghost
effects.
Wouldn't be afraid of that. Ghost isn't afraid of ghosts.
That's true. Yeah. Well, you know, so back in the very last John chapter, it was John 9 of A Game of Thrones, when Mormont was confronting John about him deserting and then his friends bringing him back. And he tells John about this plan for this great ranging. And he says he wanted John and Ghost on the ranging because the blood of the First Men is strong in the Starks and that they remember things that others have forgotten. So maybe in the very next paragraph, it mentions about John's sense of foreboding growing. So,
okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that. But nobody else, right? Nobody else but John has a sense of foreboding here.
Right.
Now, was the blood of the First Men strong in old Garrod when he was north of the wall and the bad guys were coming?
Yeah, that's a good point. There was definitely a smell of cold in that situation. Maybe it was the proximity to the others. Like, they were just about breathing down their neck. So maybe that's what did it there.
So you don't think the others are all around here? That's...
Oh, no.
Don't think that's
it might be. Maybe because Dywin feels it. So, you know, maybe these long-time rangers...
Well, to be fair, Dywin smells the cold. Right?
Yes.
He doesn't feel the... ominous presence. He smells the cold.
I think he's associating one with the other. I think him saying it smells like cold is him saying something's not right out here. I feel a disturbance in the force. But yeah, Mormont's, I mean, Martin's definitely creating a sense of foreboding throughout this chapter. We get John's unease when he's looking out from the ring fort. And then when he and Sam are walking back into camp, the ravens start acting up, and he thinks to himself, they feel it too. And Dywin with the smells like cold, and then Ghost's odd behavior, both at the beginning of the chapter when he refuses on multiple occasions to come into the ring fort, and then when he does come into the ring fort, he's acting very odd and skittish and unsettled before he takes John on the little excursion out to find the buried treasure.
So we have no idea, or if we do, it's a spoiler for what we know is to come. So for us to say definitively what is going on here, I think it would be a spoiler based on what we know is still to come. But
right.
One other idea for why Ghost is behaving that way is if that cloak at the end belongs to Benjen Stark, maybe he smells a Stark in the air and
Yeah.
And that's why he doesn't want to keep going, because he smelled something and wants to investigate it and wants Jon to not go up the hill until they've looked for it. Finally gets his way. If Ghost calms down next chapter, we'll know he wasn't really disquieted. He was just trying to be lassie.
Yeah, and maybe that's why he eventually came into the Ringfort. He didn't want to go up there because he's like, I smell something. I smell a Stark. I've got to go investigate. And then he found it and was like, okay, now I can go to the Ringfort. Alert you. Now come follow me. Yes. Ah, I like it. I had not thought about that at all. That's good.
Yeah. Because he clearly is leading him to it at the end of the chapter. The rest of the chapter, John was just trying to get Ghost to do what John wanted.
Right.
And so Ghost kept on agitating and then giving up. And finally he got John to follow him. And then if his behavior returns to normal, we'll know that's just what he was doing all along.
So all the foreboding might just be in John's head. All of the things that are, you know, creating a sense of dread here.
It's my point entirely.
Yeah.
It's just an old fort, you know.
Right. Because
I'm sure you could freak yourself out.
When Ghost comes into the Ringfort and gets John's attention, John, his thoughts are when Ghost is acting oddly, that it reminds him of the way he behaved when Othar's corpse reanimated. And so he's afraid that Ghost is coming to alert him to.
But honestly, if that's the case, John shouldn't just follow Ghost. John should say, you know what? This is how Ghost behaved when the dead rose. Come with me, guys.
Yes, I know. I have that further down in the notes as well. He just follows him right out of camp in the middle of the night with no plan. You know, it doesn't notify anyone, doesn't bring any backup. And what he was doing, and I was like, there's that impetuosity that he's known for.
Yes.
Just 15-year-old running off into the woods.
I'm sensing, Ghost, that what you're trying to tell me is that there's something very sinister out there. Let me just wait for nightfall and I'll follow you by myself. You know?
It didn't even mention whether he had Longclaw on him or not.
Yeah, good point. So maybe he's, in typical horror movie fashion, he's just taken a flashlight.
Right, yes. He's out there with simply a flashlight, wandering around in the woods by himself. What could go wrong? I wondered if all of this foreboding and, building this sense of dread that is being, that John is feeling, it was all just to set us up for when he finds a dragon glass and horn to feel like, oh, this must be something special.
Right. Yeah, without that, it's just an interesting find of lumps of dragon glass.
Right.
But with the foreboding, you're perhaps tying the two together, you know.
Oh, this must be something here. Right. Yeah.
So earlier on in the chapter, when John started to get a little freaked out, he talked to Sam, and weirdly, Sam was all upbeat and feeling good about life, which is strange.
It is.
I mean, Sam's obviously not a POV character, so we don't know Sam as well as we know John, but it feels like the further from the wall they get, the more afraid Sam would be becoming. But instead, he's actually finding himself look at me, ranging north of the wall.
Yes, it's kind of an opposite thing going on here. The further away from the wall Sam gets, the more confident he seems to be,
right.
And John's going in the other direction. Yeah. But once again, I thought maybe it was John's first men blood causing some spidey senses to tingle that Sam and his southern blood is just blissfully unaware of.
You're really mixing the metaphors today. I mean, like, we've had Star Wars, we've got the Marvel Universe, you know.
I just keep trying to throw them all in as I can.
Yeah. So I'll note here that Mormont's torch, the comet, is back in the sky, having taken a day off last time, if you remember.
Right. Yeah, I do, yes.
And it's as bright as the moon, so again, pretty obvious.
You would have think it might have garnered a mention by Kat, but yeah, maybe not. Maybe she's so used to it now, she doesn't even think to notice it.
Yeah, exactly. Just there. So I think the whole geography of the place is impressive. I like the fact that the fist pokes out of the haunted forest. This joining your theme of like cross-referencing with other tropes,
right.
This reminds me of Lord of the Rings a little bit. I sort of feel that this is sort of like a Mirkwood sort of situation, or maybe where is it that the
Weathertop
will stab Frodo? Weathertop, exactly. Yeah. That's
that's the one I thought you were going to go with.
I was going to go with it, but you know me and remembering
things. Right, yes.
we are ships in the night. We pass each other by. But so he has these beautiful vistas over the Haunted Forest, which looks really cool from up there. And then the Frostfangs dominate the western and northern horizons because they basically, it's a lot. They're sort of at the southern end of the Frostfangs. The Frostfangs run north. They are to the west of them, and they run north from there. So the sort of northwestern vista is sort of dominated.
Yeah, you know, me being a Vale man and all, I enjoy reading descriptions of geography as much as the next person, but especially when there's like mountain ranges and the forests involved, but maybe not for a whole chapter.
Yeah, because that's pretty much all we get here. So just to put them in context of where they are with regards to the wall, looking at sort of maps of this, they are about 100 miles north of the wall, but right at the western edge of the wall. So the continent bulges out here, so all of the Frostfangs are west of any part of the wall. The wall obviously spans coast to coast, but the coast cuts in at that point, and so all of this stuff is to the west of where the wall ends.
Right.
And to the north, obviously, because they're north of the wall. And the western edge of the wall is the Shadow Tower, where Corrin Halfhand's men are coming from.
Yeah.
So they don't have as much as far to travel. I mean, most of the traveling of the Great Ranging so far has been westward, with a bit of 100 miles north thrown in for good measure.
Right. Yeah. Just to add a little more to the distance that they've traveled.
Yeah. So they're separated from the Frostfangs by the Milkwater River, or at least I think it is. The maps aren't totally clear on this. The maps of the Milkwater show a definite branch of the Milkwater going up into the Frostfang Mountains, and that's one of the passes that they're thinking of going into the Frostfangs on.
Right.
That branch of that river merges with other branches when it comes down out of the mountains, and that river is not named. I'm assuming the whole thing is the Milkwater.
I agree.
I'm not
100%. Yes, you're right. The one that comes directly down from the north doesn't have a name on the map.
Right, exactly. But the one that comes from the west, from the Frostfangs, and merges with that is called the Milkwater. So I think the whole thing is the Milkwater.
Yes. And they've traveled about as far from Craster's as Craster's is from Castle Black.
Right, yes. So, that's a good point as well. Yeah. And the branch of the Milkwater that isn't named, that just runs north alongside the mountains, is quite huge. I mean, it runs hundreds of miles up there. So I do wonder how big that river must be. Because if you have a river that's hundreds of miles long and is being fed by mountains, a lot of water would flow into that river. It would be a pretty deep river by where they are.
That's a good point. I wonder if there's bridges. Are they going to have to find a way to ford it if they're going to get to the western edge?
Right. And by the time a river that's being fed by mountains has run for a couple of hundred miles, it's going to be big and deep, wide and deep by that point.
Yeah. Good point.
So, don't know. We personally haven't crossed the Milkwater, but apparently the wildlings know how to do it.
I guess so. Now, Mormont, he's not planning on crossing the river unless they have to. He wants both the rangers currently to stay on this side of the river, because he's kind of thinking like the river is a division in the territory right now. He doesn't want to send rangers across the river because he's afraid of losing them, because he imagines that Manse Raider's probably got some people of his own over there.
Or given what we were just talking about, to drowning, because that's a big river.
That too.
Yeah, so the advisors are talking about the routes they could take into the Frostfang Mountains to find the wildlings. The options are the Skirling Pass, which is a little bit south of the Milkwater, which is a series of passes. It's roughly due east of where they are at the Fist of the First Men. The alternative is the Giant Stairs, which goes alongside the Milkwater, which is north and west of where they are. They think they will be easily spotted on that one. But honestly, looking at, and again, we're looking at pretty rough drawn maps, but it looks like the Skirling Pass, if there are tens of thousands of wildlings, the Skirling Pass is the way into the Frostfangs for those tens of thousands of people. Everything else looks too treacherous, too hilly, too mountainous. individually you could take the giant stairs, but if thousands of people are trekking, migrating, the Skirling Pass is the way. And the thing is, if you don't choose the right pass, you might not find them.
Right, they might be on the other side.
Right, because the Skirling Pass seems to open up into something of an open area within the Frostfangs. The giant steps just keep going up into the mountains. I can't imagine tens of thousands of people are lurking at the top of those steps.
Yeah, I think it's Mormont that says, with a group that large, they're going to have to follow the Milkwater, I guess, for water purposes, mm-hmm. May possibly travel purposes, if they can float boats down it, I don't know. But so he's thinking that their large group will come that way. Yeah, what you say makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, the maps are so rough that, it could be that at the headwaters of the Milkwater, you get a nice area where you could camp in utterly freezing conditions, but you're wildlings, so
right,
you just guts it out.
Right. You know, they're basing all this off of a map that Sam drew at Craster's Keep. Craster traded the information of where Mance Raiders gathering all these wildlings for some fancy weapons and stuff. And Mormont tells Thorin that we don't need to send the Rangers across the Milkwater because we already know where this is happening because Craster told us. And right. I thought, is it wise to blindly trust Craster? You know?
Well, I mean, at this point, what choice have you got? I mean, this gathering of wildlings is somewhere.
Yes, right.
It seems reasonable. I mean, why would Craster lie about that? And the difference between the path the Skirling Pass and the giant steps take into the mountains is only tens of miles. It's only, 50 miles maybe. So
yeah,
they're up there somewhere. I wouldn't gamble on going either way. As Mormont repeatedly says, they're coming back down from those mountains eventually.
Right. Yeah. And so Smallwood sulks over the Rangers' restrictions and kind of he pouts and leaves. And back in John 1 of this chapter, he and Mormont got into it about being the first ranger. He referred to himself as the first ranger, I think. And Mormont said, Ben Stark is still first ranger until we can confirm that he is no longer alive. And then after Smallwood left, Mormont told John and Sam he'd rather make Sam first ranger than Smallwood. So not smooth sailing.
Sam's really growing into the role, I think.
Right, he just might. As long as he's north of the wall, he's a tough guy here.
Yeah. So Mormont's plan is partly to make himself obvious so that Corin Harfan can find him, and hopefully Benjen Stark as well. It does make a certain amount of sense. I mean, it's a good place to meet. Although, honestly, before I went on a great ranging north of the wall with a plan to meet up with Corin Harfand, I would have come up with a rendezvous point, not just banked on him finding me.
We'll just figure it out when we get up there.
Right. Or at least have ravens that can fly between the two groups,
Yes. That's
if you're just going to sit on top of the mountain burning a big sort of bonfire so everyone from miles around can see
you. I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Those 50,000 wildlings and those others, they're not going to notice that.
Right.
White Walkers, they're not attracted to fire and human flesh.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They probably should have had a predestined meeting location, at least meeting range. We'll meet somewhere around the Fist of the First Men.
Yeah.
So that's the third option, though. The third option is don't go into the Frostfangs at all. There's some solid logic to that, of course.
Yeah.
You go into the Frostfangs, you lose the higher ground that you currently have at the Fist here, and it's inhospitable and dangerous. So,
right. Of course, all of these options pale into insignificance behind the one sensible option, which is go back to the wall, but, let's not dwell.
Yeah. So Mormont says, we're going to stay here at the Fist of the First Men because the wildlings can't slip by us. And then someone says, I think it's Malador Locke says, well, they might not want to slip by us because they probably outnumber us at least 10 to 20 to 1. And Mormont says, well, if it does come to battle, we're in a good location being up here. And that statement, if it comes to battle, just made me once again question, what's the plan? Like, what is his end game? What's his goal here? Is it to talk to them? Just spy on them? Now, I went back into the last chapter of Game of Thrones, I mean, last John chapter, and looked up what his stated goals were. And he said he wants to find Benjen, possibly Sir Waymar, and the other Rangers who have disappeared, which he now admits is seemingly impossible because it's just too vast. So
know that from the maps that Sam drew.
Right.
Looking.
Right. It looked pretty attainable till we got up here.
Has Lord Commander Mormont ever climbed up on the wall? He thinks it's just like a swimming pool over there. He doesn't realize it's like a continent.
Right. And the other thing he mentioned was to discover info on what caused Jafer Flowers and Othar to rise from the dead. And he said this. This is pretty much a quote. I wrote it down. I don't know if I got it word for word, but he said, "The Night's Watch will ride in force against the wildlings, the others, and whatever else is out there." So to me, that sounds like he wanted to fight them. If you're going to ride in force on somebody.
Again, it's absolute madness. So the wildlings come down from the Frostfangs. They see the Night's Watch on top of the Fist of the First Men. They have three options. One is besiege them. Let them run out of water. I don't care how big your cisterns are. Those horses drink a lot every single
right.
day.
Good okay? point.
And you beat them that way. Secondly, you leave a garrison of your wildlings around them to keep them there. Meanwhile, the majority of your force goes off to the now undefended wall.
Exactly.
Third, don't even mess with that. Just ride on by. The wall is undefended. They'll be chasing after you like...
Yes, you make a lot of very solid points there, which we've basically mentioned this stuff before. They're heavily outnumbered and in enemy territory, so being on the southern side of the wall helps balance your deficiency in numbers a good bit by the 700-foot wall. So
we'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the 700-foot wall is like at medieval times, one army has fighter jets and chooses not to use them. Instead, rides out with horses and swords. And it's like, you've got a 700-foot wall. It's your trump card.
Yeah, and he told John last chapter that he expects Mance Rayder to invade the Seven Kingdoms. He figures that's what his plan is. He's going to try and invade the Seven Kingdoms. And if he's right, which seems very possible, wouldn't it be better to use like, he's probably taken 300 of his best men. Wouldn't it make more sense to spread these 300 men across the wall as best they can?
Wall.
Just to keep an eye out. If you see someone, send off a raven. Hey, because it's going to take them a little time to enforce. Maybe one or two could, scale the wall. But a force useful enough is going to take quite a while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're 100% correct.
Anyway. Oh, well.
So John spends a lot of time with his recipe for spiced mulled wine.
He does.
Mulled wine. Yeah. It sounds very good, and especially on a cold night, there is no other kind.
It's true, there is.
I don't care what they smell, it's always cold up there.
Comparatively cold, I guess.
I will say, though, it's not the most thrilling read. I mean, I read recipe books occasionally, and I find them to be slow and ponderous, too.
Yeah. There's at least half a page was taken up by his preparation of this wine, so...
And you got to not boil it. You got to get it hot, but not boil it.
Right. So that's a key distinction. Challenge. So if you're making spiced mulled wine at home, don't let it come to a boil. Maybe just a solid simmer.
So when they find Benjen's, sorry, when they find the cloak, are we supposed to think it's Benjen's cloak? Because I wasn't sure about that at all.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you said earlier, that Ghost being in tuned with the Stark family and have, you know, I think we're supposed to assume that it is because Ghost found it. And like you said, maybe he smelled, hey, there's another Stark scent out here. And tracked it down that way. Because otherwise, it's just completely random luck that he managed to find this buried cloak.
Yeah. And I wonder, I mean, I do wonder, there's a sort of inconsistency to the coldness of the North. Because for me, this, it feels like, as far north as they are, the ground should be sort of permanently frozen up here.
Right. I would agree.
And so you'd think that this cloak would actually not really degrade because it would just be frozen solid.
Right.
And it wouldn't get any, you know, it wouldn't be eaten away by moths or anything. It would just be like a frozen solid block. And whether it was 1,000 years old or 10 years or 2 months old, it would basically look the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point.
Now, if the thaws come, if it thaws and warms, yeah, sure. Then things will start to eat away at it. But I would guess from a casual observation, it would be difficult to tell how old that cloak was if the ground is as cold as I think it must be.
Yeah, that's a solid point. I guess being that it's summer, it's a little warmer north of the wall than it will be in winter by probably a good bit, but it's still got to be pretty cold.
Right, and maybe that's why they think it's recent. Maybe that's why they think it might be recent, because it isn't degraded to nothing, which it would be through a cycle of thaw and freeze.
It's certainly been above freezing because the last John chapter, the Craster's Keep chapter, it rained the whole time. So it was above freezing at that point. So
good point. Yeah.
But then it got down below it because then it froze. Everything froze the next morning. So it does fluctuate a bit, I guess.
Yeah. Apparently the first men really went in for obsidian weapons. I think that's a conclusion here. Obsidian comes from volcanoes. It isn't actually from dragonfire. Although maybe it is in Westeros, but in on our world, it comes from volcanoes.
Which is useful, because otherwise it would be hard to get obsidian here on Earth. If it could only come from dragonfire.
We would really struggle to find any.
Yes.
It would basically be fictional here on Earth. If it comes from volcanoes, that rather goes to my theory of these northern volcanoes leading to the random winters.
Right.
My unoriginal theory, I should say, since... Well, although I had the theory independently, it had been had many times before by other people. So
it's hard for us to have ideas that hasn't been had by other people at some point. But anyway, continue. So,
obsidian was a common Stone Age weapon in our world because when it fractures, like flint does, it fractures into sharp, pointy edges. And so it was easy to make weapons from it. You just had to fracture it and you automatically had a weapon.
You got a sharp edge.
So there was no sharpening required from that point. Ghost's archaeological find would be pretty outstanding here on Earth. That would be an awful lot to find in one place. So the question is, were the first men using it so prevalently out of necessity, out of a lack of alternatives, or just because they were a bit primitive? Or was there a special magic to them?
Right.
Were they using them because they were special in whatever the first men were trying to achieve?
Yeah. Well, I dug up a quote from Martin on dragonglass or obsidian. And he said, I've given it magical characteristics that, of course, real obsidian doesn't necessarily have. After all, we live in a world that has no magic. He's never been to Disney World, apparently. My world does have magic, so it's a little bit different. So that's his take on it. But then back in Bran 7 of A Game of Thrones, right before the Raven came with the news of Ned's death, Luwin was showing the kids and Osha the dragonglass arrowheads up in his turret, and he said that these are weapons from the Children of the Forest. And he said a man who trusts in spells is dueling with glass swords like the Children of the Forest did, referring to these dragon glass weapons here.
But that's interesting, because Luwin is actually disparaging them. He's saying one of the reasons the Children of the Forest lost is because they had glass weapons.
Right.
They should have forged steel, like, you know, then they would still be here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A glass sword against a steel sword is likely to lose unless it's very special glass. But so this made me, this discovery, Ghost and then John finding this bundle of treasures here, made me wonder, was this hidden as a cache to come back for later or placed in a spot he hoped someone would find? I can't imagine that he thought, oh, they're going to send in large, a great ranging to come looking for me. But possibly Mormont could have sent out a third rescue party to find the rescue party that Benjen was part of. If it was Benjen, I mean, whoever it was, did they put this here in hopes that someone would find it? And that's why they wrapped their cloak around it to signify, hey, this was from me. A member of the Night's Watch put this here. Or was it just being hidden away from someone else? And Ghost just randomly found it.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
Yeah, we can speculate, but it would just be speculation.
Yeah, I don't know. I wondered, why was it buried and why was it wrapped in a Night's Watch cloak?
It feels to me a little bit like the scene from Fargo where he buries the money in the vast field of snow and puts the little scraper in it to signify where it was.
Right.
That's what's happened. He's coming back for it one day.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the thing. He was either hiding it in hopes to come back for it, hiding it away from someone, or putting it here as a, hey, if you come across this, then you know I've been this direction.
Right.
But why would you bury it like 2 feet deep if you were hoping someone would come across it? Maybe there was a marker that Ghost knocked over or dug out or something.
Right.
You know?
The one thing I'll say is that in actual fact, when we come to the TV show, I mentioned this. If they were trying to share it, trying to let others find it, it wasn't a good spot. A much better spot would have been on top of the thing. Because on top of the thing is somewhere where your allies might make a stand.
Yes. Yes.
And that would have been easier to find. And also, they would have explored that ground a lot more carefully and perhaps come across it. Whereas, random point down the hill, chances are low. Without a direwolf in your midst, you're never going to find it.
Yes, that's very true. But very unlikely to find it in random point in the woods below the hill.
About as likely as you are to find Benjen Stark just by wandering around and... Benjen!
Yeah.
So to background, the Fist of the First Men, so just a bit of geography on it, it's very steep to the north and west and only slightly less steep to the east, so it's very defensible. But that lack of water, especially if Mance Rayder's wildling army is as big as it might be, we don't know, but they're talking tens of thousands, they can starve you. They can win that battle just by surrounding the hill. It's not that big of a hill. With that kind of army, you can make it impossible to get down off the hill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you're going to die of thirst.
Absolutely. That's. I get his reason for liking the fortification and the high ground, obviously.
Yeah. Like a wall.
Yeah. It's like if you were if your house is being overrun by... It's like a wall. It just hit me what you said.
especially a wall where on the other side you've got pastures and sheep and water. And...
Seven kingdoms to run to if need be.
Infinite supply of men.
Yes, I see it now. Unfortunately, Mormont hasn't seen it yet. Yeah. But it's kind of like if your house is being overrun by zombies and you went up to the attic, you'd be safe if you had like one of those pull down doors that come out of the ceiling.
Yeah, you went up there,
you know, that it can't get to you, but that's also can't get out.
You are now trapped. Yes, that is what Mormont is doing here. Yeah, he left his zombie proof bubble
exactly
and went and hid in his attic.
So also I thought I'd mention real quick, Thorin Smallwood, who is the acting, keyword acting, First Ranger, as Mormont's...
Assistant to the First Ranger.
Right. So he's obviously from House Smallwood of the Riverlands. Well, he's obviously from House Smallwood. House Smallwood comes from the Riverlands, and their seat is Acorn Hall, which is about due west from Harrenhal and southeast of River Run. And their sigil is 6 acorns on a yellow field. And it's kind of, the acorns are kind of an upside down pyramid with 3 acorns at the top, 2 in the middle, 1 at the bottom. And the current lord is Theomar Smallwood. And the reason I said that House Smallwood, he's from House Smallwood, and House Smallwood is from the Riverlands, is because it's unclear how Thorin is related to the Acorn Hall Smallwoods. So he may or may not be from Acorn Hall in the Riverlands.
Right, right. Comparison with the television show, a lot of this chapter is taken up by the subsidiary characters. We don't actually see much of John here. It's Sam's very excited by the history of the Fist of the First Men. Corin Halfhand appears almost immediately they arrived there, so that's maybe a spoiler of what's coming in the book, but there's very little time of Mormont's men being alone at the Fist of the First Men. The geography is very different. The Fist rises up from a rocky set of ridges and crests in a snowy landscape, no forest at all.
Okay.
And no ghost at all here. Ghost just doesn't appear.
Special effects are too expensive on that, I guess.
And the finding of the dragonglass is much delayed. That wasn't done at this point. It wasn't. Oh. They arrived at the Fist of the First Men. A couple of episodes later, they're going to find the dragonglass.
Okay. Do you think that's to give the cast of characters, aside from John on this great ranging, something to do? Because it makes more sense, John finding it, obviously, especially if it was Benjen that left it, Ghost and John finding something that a Stark left. So why mix it up? Other than,
yeah, I mean,
what else are these
honestly,
guys doing?
I actually think it's because Gren, Sam, and Eddard, Dolorous Ed, are better characters. They're much more interesting to have around. And so, you're absolutely right. Give them a bit more screen time because they're the three who find it when they do find it. And as I was hinting before, they find it on top of the Fist of the First Men. That's where they find it. They're digging the latrines or cisterns.
Yes.
And they find it there.
That makes sense. You're gonna bury it 2 feet deep or whatever. Bury it somewhere that someone might find it
with a big sign saying, dig toilet here.
Right.
The TV show, so as we've sort of hinted, doesn't suggest any connection to Benjen whatsoever. And right. In actual fact, when it's dug up, Sam says of the cloak, it's been here a long time.
So it's still wrapped in a Night's Watch cloak. They didn't just find a cache of this stuff.
Yeah, it is wrapped in a Night's Watch cloak, but he says it's been here a long time. So he's discounting the fact that it's one of the current missing rangers who hid this cache. This feels more like it's an ancient cache that the Night's Watch put here for future generations.
Yeah, and you know, your observation that it's cold north of the wall. This cloak could have been here a long time, and John just thinks. Although John said the earth above the bundle looked like it had been recently messed with.
In the TV show, they're digging down for the latrines and they hit rock and they find like a tablet
with
carvings on it, and they lift that up and it's underneath that. So it was protected from the elements.
Definitely major distinction there.
Yeah. So pedantry, I mean, there's the overall pedantry of they shouldn't be here. The wall is a much better place to be.
Right.
Benjen knows where the wall is. And if he gets like discombobulated, he could just head south and he'll find the wall eventually.
Maybe it's Mormont's torch it's disorienting him.
He can't. but a specific piece of pedantry is that Mormont says that they'll dig cisterns in order to solve the water problem
and keep the men busy.
Yes, and keep the men busy. That is the other part of it. So they're on top of the hill, so water's going to be an issue. There's no well, so they're going to have to lug the water up from the stream that runs nearby. So obviously a huge problem if they get besieged. I didn't quite know what was meant by a cistern, so I did a little bit of research on this.
I'm glad you did, because I didn't either.
Vessel, yeah. It's a waterproof vessel for storing water. So it's different from a well, because a well you dig down until you find the groundwater. A cistern, you don't do that. You collect water into a cistern. You might have runoff from your roof go to it, or, as in this case, have an endless stream of men bringing buckets of water up. Yeah.
Do they have that many buckets?
Right. Early ones were dug out and then waterproofed with something like plaster or hewn out of solid rock. Now, clearly they don't have time for that. So then how are they going to waterproof this thing? Because if you don't waterproof this thing, you're going to you can pour water into a hole. Mostly it disappears.
I've seen kids doing that at the beach.
Exactly. It doesn't hang around.
Yeah, doesn't work very well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if his plan really is to just keep the men busy.
Right. Just dig a hole over there.
Just dig a hole. As big as you can. Meanwhile, you bring buckets of water up and throw it in that hole.
Right.
But I'm not sure it's going to work unless they have some technology to make that thing waterproof. I think it's not going to work.
Maybe that's what the dragon glass is for. They're going to line the inside of the hole with dragon glass.
It all comes together. That's right. That's what they're going to do.
That's why this stuff is so special.
News and notes?
News and notes. So, if you want to read Fire and Blood, which is the first volume of the history of the Targaryen family, but you don't want to pay the fancy hardback book prices for it, you're in luck because Random House is now offering a paperback edition of Fire and Blood. Oh. And according to George Martin, it's available at your favorite bookseller. So go out and get it if you've been waiting for the hardback prices to drop. Exciting. Or maybe you just don't like hardbacks. Stacey doesn't like hardback books. She waits for a book to come out.
Carson doesn't like hardbacks either. Carson doesn't like hardbacks, and I don't understand it. I mean, I get, she says it's too heavy. She'd rather carry a, but I'm like, it's just nicer to have a hardback.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind hardback, but as long as it's that new style of paperback that's like very sturdy, you know what I'm talking about? They've got like it's not like the mass media paperback.
Yeah, but My Clash of Kings is falling apart. Pages are falling out all over the place.
You have the mass market media one, right? Like the small kind of. Yeah, those ones are tough. But
Michele,
they make
two things you know about me. One, I don't remember anything, and two is I'm very cheap.
Frugal. We're gonna go with frugal.
You can go with cheap. I'm fine with it.
You're many conscious. That brings me to the next thing is there's a Game of Thrones official fan convention coming up February 18th through the 20th, I believe, of 2022 at the Rio Convention Center in Las Vegas. And if you're interested, you can go to gotcon.events. And I learned about this because Jenny of Oldstones, the queen bee of our Discord server, posted it a link to it this morning. And we were discussing on the Discord server how cool it would be to do a Ghosts of Harrenhal meetup at said Game of Thrones convention.
If the coronavirus is cleared up by then, we're there. We'll do this. We'll make this happen.
That was my tie-in to your frugalness. Would you be up for such a thing?
Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm too cheap to gamble, so I won't lose a lot of money. You know?
Yeah, the two of us in Vegas, we might make it up till midnight. Play a few penny slots. Anyway, so that would be fun. I mean, we're not confirming anything here at this point. We're just saying.
Yeah, I think any promise which has a caveat around the coronavirus is pretty sort of open-ended because that ain't going anywhere anytime soon. Not in this world.
Yeah. But it's currently still on as far as I know. It's happening in February of next year, and it would be cool if we can make it work to show up there. But
for real, I mean, seriously, if the world ever does get on top of the coronavirus, I mean, we'll definitely go to some Game of Thrones type conventions because we want to meet people.
Yeah, that we do.
Okay, so we got a nice review from Cake Bevins on Apple Podcasts. I actually think that the review can be read in two ways, and I think one of them is very funny. So it reads, "Very good. Not many like it." I know what they're trying to say. Oh, every word of that is true.
In every sense.
I'm only on episode 70, and these two hosts are great. So thank you. Thank you, Kate Bevins. That's a nice thing to say, and also a little bit funny.
Yes. The second part helps clear up the meaning of the first.
Yes. I mean, clearly it was well-intentioned.
Yes.
So in conclusion, it's pretty grim up north.
It is.
Cold and miserable.
Yeah. Ghost's acting odd.
Ghost is acting odd.
We don't know why.
I like our interpretation. I think we've hit the nail on the head. Ghost is in tune with the Starks, and he's sniffed out Benjen's cloak. Benjen is going to be awfully cold.
He is. Maybe that's why he hasn't shown up yet. He's frozen to death because he took that cloak off.
Right. He got like a mile down the road and he was like, that was stupid.
And then he went to go back and find it. digging in all these spots. It was this tree. No, it was that tree.
Like 20 yards away, they find him frozen to death.
Oh, man.
John Stewart is improving. His careful recipe for mulled wine shows this. He seems to be
embracing him being a steward, unlike when he first found out about his new role.
Yep. And they found a really, really... I mean, honestly, they found probably the second best place in the north to fight Mance Rayder's army.
The second best. So if it's a second best, that means there's a best. What would the best place be?
Not where they are. Where they were, not where they are. Yeah.
I don't think you mean Craster's Keep either.
No. So this great ranging really isn't providing a lot of great insights. I mean...
No. Not so far, anyway.
Giving the men something to do, I guess, but other than that...
Yeah. Probably a lot of them came to the Night's Watch thinking, I'm going to go north of the wall and I'm going to fight wildlings and others and I'm going to have grand adventures. And then they discovered day-to-day life at Castle Black is rather mundane. So this is a excursion for them to get excited about.
I'm going to contend that point. I'm going to say the vast majority of the recruits to the Night's Watch arrived at the wall going... Maybe castration is better.
That could be too. That's the other way to look at it. Yeah, that could be. Mormont, he's definitely putting a lot of stock in this info from Craster, who we know is a liar. He lied about not having had any interaction with whites or others, and we've heard that he actually has a pact with the others, that he gives his sons over to them. So...
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, you're right. What would it benefit Craster to lie about where they are? What would it, you know?
Yeah,
but we don't know.
Equally, what does it benefit him to tell the truth?
You know? Yeah, we don't know what is being offered by the other side. So
right. Yeah, the point of the Dragonglass, is it a message from some former member of the Night's Watch, or was it just randomly hidden? Is its magicalness, which you've mentioned that George Martin has admitted to, is that what Ghost was freaked out about? Maybe he smelled the magic coming
off. Okay, sure.
And went looking for it that way. Nothing to do with Benjen. That's another thought.
Yes.
I guess we'll find out one day.
Yep. Hopefully we will.
All right. As always, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord.
And if you wouldn't mind going out and please leaving us a 5-star rate, we very much would appreciate that. We love reading your reviews as well, so if you'd mind leaving us a glowing review, we'd certainly appreciate that. And if you do, we might read it on a future episode.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.